WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
If it's Monday night, it's got to be Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tachi. So thanks for having me on.
Kevin, good for you to hold back and let him tell his story.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
You guys are the center of the universe today, at least the political universe.
I believe both of you are from the area. Marshfield guys, yes, no?
Correct, yeah.
That's right.
There's only one person not from Marshfield in this room right now. And it's you.
It's me. I'm the outcast.
Well, you've always been generous with the time. I appreciate it very much.
Well, I'm honored to be on your show tonight, Kevin, with that impressive lineup you have.
I believe our guest that we've been waiting for, Congressman Stephen Lynch.
Kevin, good to join you.
The governor of the Commonwealth, Charlie Baker. You ready?
I got to tell you that it was really nice to hear Aerosmith on the intro there.
You're going
to
be the rock and roll governor?
I don't know about that, but...
We have Mayor Joe Sullivan joining us, sir. How are you?
Well, Kevin, very good to be with you again.
Dr. Drew Pinsky. Dr. Drew, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Mr. Ming Tsai, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.
Massachusetts State Auditor Suzanne Bump. Hello, Auditor. How are you?
I am fine, and I'm delighted to be with you this evening.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome, and good evening. You are tuned in to Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD. My name is Kevin Tachi, and I will guide you through the next hour, well, 2 hours, I should say, actually. I was going to say an hour, three quarters. It is a President's Day holiday. Hope that you made the most of the day. If, in fact, your employer or place of business gave you the day off, we have a great show lined up for you. We'll get that kicked off in a couple of moments after we check traffic one final time today. First guest will be a State House report, of course, always the beginning of the show. State Representative Joan Moschino will be joining us, and looking forward to catching up with her. We have not had a chance to talk with the representative, I don't think, since maybe just after COVID had hit. I want to say maybe late March, maybe April, but it has been some time since we've had a chance to catch up with her. So we'll use a few minutes of our program to catch up with her, but then we're going to jump right into what we have been working on. A lot of legislators in and around the Commonwealth are at work, hard at work, to make sure that they're going to be filing bills or they're going to be co-sponsoring bills. There are a couple of bills that the representative is filing that I'm interested in, one of them being the Access to Justice bill. We'll get into the meat and potatoes on that, as well as a streaming bill. The streaming bill would help out local cable, local TV stations, PEG access centers such as Marshfield TV, PAC TV, Harbor Media, just to name a few, with a lot of the work they do. And they don't do it for free, and they need to have a staff and purchase equipment. So this would help them. Hour number two, we will speak with Bishop Tony Branch. Tony is a radio personality. Also, he chairs the Diversity Commission in the city of Brockton. We'll talk with him about Black History Month. As you know, February is Black History Month. We'll talk about the importance of this month and the importance of remembering those who have put their time in and some of the work they have done on behalf of Black Americans. Then we will wrap things up with somebody you know. If you tune into the WATD radio network, which is not only 95.9 WATD, but it's 1460 AM WBMS, as well as 1510 WMEX, the good guys. Well, Ben not only is a radio personality on MEX, but he also does work here at WATD and has his own show that actually you can tune into at 9 o'clock tonight. So we'll talk with Ben and get his take on being an all-around good guy and all the work that he does in radio, whether he's on microphone or behind the scenes. So we look forward to that. Right now, time for us to step aside for a couple of moments. We're going to take a traffic break, but it's being brought to you by Brennan Smoke Shop, online at brennansmokeshopma.com, with locations in Plymouth, Pembroke, Brockton, Wareham, Raynham, Todd, Stoughton, New Bedford, and Weymouth.
Well, thanks, Kevin. 93 South is now slow from Route 37 to Route 138. I'm not seeing any delays on the expressway southbound from the tunnel to the split. Northbound's an easy 10-minute ride from Ranger to Boston. and Routes 3 and 24 are both moving along. This report is sponsored by the Centers for Disease Control. Millions of people suffer from an addiction to prescription opioids. It's not easy, but there is hope recovery is possible. If you or someone you know is struggling, visit cdc.gov/rxawareness. Traffic on the nines every morning. I'm Lisa DiMilo in the WATD Traffic Center.
I'm amazed at the number of you here in the Commonwealth that aren't aware of the tobacco flavor ban. All flavored vape and tobacco products are banned from being sold here in Massachusetts, including menthol. It's okay. You can always go to New Hampshire or stop by one of our 9 locations and pick up some flavored CBD hemp wraps. Grape, pineapple, watermelon, strawberry. That's right. We have a huge selection of full-spectrum CBD hemp wraps. It's just another example of our American ingenuity. Oh, and a very special thank you to Speaker of the House Robert DeLeo for 30 years on Beacon Hill. May your greatest achievement be sending billions of Massachusetts taxpayer dollars to New Hampshire. Billions of dollars for their infrastructure, their roads, their police and firefighters, etc., etc.,
etc., etc. Count them, etc., etc.
Brennan's Smoke Shop, Plymouth, Pembroke, Brockton, Wareham, Raynham, Taunton, Stoughton, New Bedford, and now on Bridge Street in North Weymouth. Brennan's Smoke Shop, the best smoke shop in Massachusetts. Flavored CBD hemp wraps, dudes.
Be a part of the show. Call and join in on the conversation. 781-837-4900. Now, back to Monday Night Talk.
Joining us, it's been a while since I've had a chance to speak with this particular state representative. We have some great conversation on board. Hopefully, you'll stay tuned. You'll keep your dial set right where it's at. We're going to speak with State Representative Joan Moschino and kind of get caught up with her as to a new legislative term, what it's been like dealing with COVID, and also some of the bills that she is either sponsoring, authoring, all the above. Representative, welcome back to the program.
Oh, it's so wonderful to see you. It's so wonderful to join you. I'm just sorry we can't be in person tonight. I really love coming into the studio and catching up and visiting with all of your listeners. This is great.
So my first question right out of the gate is, how are you doing during COVID and how have you endured the last 12 months of this pandemic?
So it's been interesting. It's definitely been different. But everyone should feel very comforted. We are virtual. Our offices are all continue to be remote, but they are fully operational. And so, as I always start off with, constituent services is number one priority for my office and for all of our colleagues on the South Shore. And so people who, you know, feel that they need our help, you know, if they're navigating something with, you know, state government or benefits or something like that, we've seen a lot of unemployment cases, absolutely should, you know, call me or the state rep that you, where you live, because we're here, we're 100% operational and we're working for you. So people should definitely reach out and call. It's been interesting, that's for sure, not being in the building. I really do miss it. The building is a special place. But we were sworn on January 6th and all virtually. And so getting better with the technology, which is great. And with that is the start of the new session. So we're filing bills right now and figuring out what the legislative landscape is going to be. And so it continues to be to be exciting and really working hard at it. So
I have to be fair and ask you this, and that is, you have a new Speaker of the House. What is it like?
Oh my gosh. Speaker Mariano should be well known to the South Shore because he's represented Quincy for so long. It's actually a breath of fresh air. You know, Speaker DeLeo was a wonderful man and certainly very good to me as our state rep. But it's nice to have Speaker Mariano come in and change up leadership a little bit. We all got our committee assignments today. To just have a fresh eye, energy. So anytime you have that kind of a change, it's really exciting to see and to think about, you know, what might come this session and what the possibilities are. So, and he's a good man and He's always been a strong leader. And I'm excited to see and have him there. So, yeah.
What are some of the committees? Are there committees that you're staying on? Do you have any new additions that you're going to be sitting on other committees? Or maybe you've moved up in stature. Maybe you're vice chair or chair.
So I'm not a vice chair or chair, but I asked for to stay on telecom, utility, and energy, and the speaker put me on there. That was my one ask, which is that's a really exciting committee. And as you remember from last session, my big bill was around climate change and the next generation roadmap that has carried over from last session. We ran out of time, but it's carried over from last session, and we'll be taking some final votes on that this year. So that was a big deal for someone so junior to get a big bill like that through in one term. Was really exciting. And I actually had Speaker Mariano's to thank for that. They pulled it forward decided they were going to finish it off. So this will be good. So yeah, it's really exciting. I'm also on, because we literally just found out, but consumer protection, I think, which is going to be super interesting. They put me on a technology committee, which is just so funny, because we'll see if you can teach this old dog a few new tricks. But I'm actually excited to learn about cybersecurity and internet. And so that'll be an interesting one for me to just dive into and so learn something new.
It's interesting you use the term dive into, because I have been trying to hold off from diving into a piece of legislation that you are working on. I believe that you have other colleagues who are joining you. And this is something, it's a streaming bill. Mm-hmm. And I believe this might be a newer version of an attempt. I believe last session there was an attempt to do a streaming bill. Give us the details, the importance of the bill that you're a part of.
So what we did was we refiled from last session. It's a streaming services bill, and it's important because it's revenue generator for public access. Hugely important, especially during the COVID pandemic, how much really fantastic programming came out of our local access channels. As you know, people have been switching over and what they call cutting the cable and switching over to streaming services. And the point of the bill is to say that the streaming services should also contribute to the public access programming in the same way that the cable channels always have done. And it's just the same mechanism. It's just a small fee through the public rights of ways. And it's an accommodation, you know, they allow them to use the public rights of ways and cable providers pay it. So now we're asking that streaming services also pay it. And it's a one-off straight to our local access channels. So it's meant to be something that makes sure we have robust programming to watch your selectmen's meeting or your school committee meetings, or think of all of the really great, the great programming that I think around history and culture and music and arts and a lot of the educational things, or just the fun events that happen in all of our communities, and people watch those channels. So we just felt that it was really super important that we continue to support that robustly. So Rep. Paul Tucker from Salem and I are presenting it together, and you know, if you share our view that this is important, anyone listening should pick up the phone to their state representative and ask them to support it with a co-sponsor. It would be great.
I know that the previous bill, the way, and it's interesting you said that it would go to the access, the PEG access centers. I believe the previous one, it was a 5%, but mm-hmm. only the access centers would get 2%. I think the state got a little hint. And I think the local community would get a hint.
So the state would get a little hint. I think we divvied it up as like 20%, 40%, 40%, if memory serves. I'd have to go back and look at the language. But the point is to support PEG, and that's the local access channels. That's the point.
Yeah, excellent.
That's exciting.
And I got to say, as you said it so eloquently, this pandemic, I feel that local television, local PEG access centers, and I'll name off a bunch of them,
whether it's Harbor Media, whether it's PAC TV, Marshfield, Hanover TV, East Bridgewater, Brockton, Abington, all of these communities that have PEG access centers have stepped up. And, you know, I'll give an example. When you can't see your daughter or son playing in a JV basketball game, a lot of these centers went out of their way to either videotape and air those programs or stream live so that you'd be able to see your child on YouTube playing real time.
And exactly.
And that takes some doing and knowing that everybody is, you know, cutting the cord and trying to make the jump from Comcast and Verizon and want to go to one of these streaming platforms. I applaud you and I applaud anybody who will support this because I feel that the folks who are working in local cable have stepped up and deserve any support they can get.
Yeah, they're fantastic. And the South Shore is par excellence. It's really wonderful, the programming down here and how they support each other. And then they share the programming with each other as well. So it's not just in our little silos of our communities. It's much more regional, much more of a community. It's really terrific.
Well, as you have updates, I would welcome you to come on and be my guest and discuss those particular updates. Or call to arms. We need people to support this bill like we're doing right now.
Absolutely.
You're more than welcome to come back. And as I normally do with a lot of the state reps and state senators that I try to have on this particular program, I want to segue to another piece of legislation that you're working on that intrigues me. Access to justice. What is that?
So this is a bill that is really restoring the right of an individual in Massachusetts to take a claim. It's a standing bill in the Massachusetts courts to make a claim for a disparate treatment under a state law. And think of it this way. With all of the new environmental justice and all the work we've been doing to combat the compressor station in Weymouth, and how all of that played out in the various courts, right? It was some administrative actions at first, and now they're in courts, and how hard it was to get regular people who felt that this was discriminatory against them to get standing in court. And they had to go through all of these legal conditions to get themselves at the table. And this basically would restore that right to bring a disparate impact claim. Think of it this way. So what it really means to say a disparate impact is really, it's a claim when a state government agency through policies or procedures or law to when a policy has had that disparate impact on individuals who are part of a designated class. So that could be gender, it could be age, it could be race, whatever. In this instance, I'm thinking of it as the environmental justice work that we just got those bills passed, and I'm thinking of it from an environmental justice impact. So it's really that ability when you're part of that designated class to bring that claim under mass law. And what it really means is that the individual would have a right to bring the civil claim arising out of that governmental regulation or policy that appears on its surface to be non-discriminatory, but actually has a discriminatory effect on that protected group. So it could be a really powerful thing for using the compressor station as an example, to be able to make those claims in a court of law. And not just to get forestalled at the administrative law process or just kept out of the courtroom at all because you didn't have standing. So it's kind of exciting to think. It's going to be a heavy lift, but I think it's a great time to bring this, especially with environmental justice protections at the forefront that we just, are just passing that now in last session.
It's interesting you mentioned that because I think back to another, before the compressor station, there was another project that, a small group of folks were concerned about how it was being moved through, and that is the power plant in Brockton, the gas-fired power plant. And the first thing was cited was environmental justice, and it seemed as though it was the same thing. It was a David versus Goliath scenario. Fortunately, the folks who were trying to fight and hung in there were able to wait out this project, and it wasn't able to gain legs. But, the folks and the compressor station, we had a different turn of events.
Right. And they actually have permitted that project. And that was a great example because the one of the key proponents of the environmental justice litigation was Rep. Michelle Dubois. Right. And so this is building on that and really creating that standing so that you can avail yourself of those rights in state court. So instead of having to slog it out at the administrative level, fighting on the merits of the project, you can take that step back, go to court and say it has a disparate impact. And so it's just meant to be another tool in the toolbox for just access to justice and equity. And one of the nice things about this bill is that if you prevail, they could award attorney's fees. And even though the claim wouldn't have to be an intentional discrimination, if it was, you would get, you know, you'd get punitive damages as well. And one of the ways you create access to justice is making sure that everybody can get into the court and can hire a lawyer. That's an equally important part of it, too. So, yeah, so it's pretty exciting to think about the opportunities for that.
You're just tuning in. We're speaking with State Representative Joan Moschino. She is our guest for this segment, and we just got a few more minutes, but I want to make sure we kind of, I'm kind of fond of renewable energies, and I've been intrigued by electric cars. And so I believe you got a bill in the works that'll provide infrastructure when it comes to electrical vehicles.
Right. So one of the things we're trying to do is now that we're tracking emissions and we're trying to shrink our carbon footprint, one of the big places where we do this is through our personal transportation, through our personal cars. And electrification is kind of the theme. And essentially, people want to buy or interested to buy electric vehicles. But I think one of the barriers is the infrastructure. How am I going to charge it? Where can I drive? How far can I get? So what this bill will do is it will tackle some of those pieces and to really address being able to create infrastructure, obviously through public venues, but the infrastructure that you need and looking ahead. So if you're doing a new building or if you're looking at parking spots, that you're actually incentivized to create charging stations so that as people transition over, the infrastructure is there to support their desire and their choice to buy an electric vehicle. So it's also going to create some additional incentives through the More EV program, because these are programs that already exist in Massachusetts. But if we're serious about starting to transition over, we have to be able to support people's choice and decision to buy that electric vehicle. So it's kind of fun. It's kind of a nerdy, wonky thing, but yeah, it's going to make a huge difference as we really decarbonize our economy. So yeah, it's very transformative. It's really good stuff.
And electric vehicles have come so far. The technology is astounding. It's getting better by the years.
Oh my gosh. And they really think about it so globally. You have a battery wall at your house and how you charge it and the ability to charge off peak. So you're charging it at lesser rates. And I mean, it's the batteries go so much further and last so much longer. And the cars are actually really great to drive. They're very comfortable. And I know a lot of us in the South Shore are waiting for them to get into SUVs. So it was really kind of exciting to sort of be on the cusp of, you know, new technology and new sectors. Of course, all of this is good for us because we're building, every time we start to think about infrastructure, what does that mean? It means jobs. It means more, you know, turn in the economy, which is, you know, good for all of us, especially as we start to think about recovery off of the pandemic. So, yeah, so it has a lot of multiple benefits, and it's kind of exciting to start to look to the future and think about, you know, how am I going to get around? How am I going to drive? How am I going to get to work? So, yeah, it's all good stuff.
Yeah, we're speaking with State Representative Joan Moschino. We're plumb out of time. If folks want to reach out to you about any of these pieces of legislation, or it's a constituent issue, how can they reach out to you or Jonathan?
So we love to hear from people. Please call us if you need us. It's the same office number that rings straight to our cell phones, 617-722-2320. And of course, if you go onto the website, www.joanmiscino.com. You can actually fill in a form, or it'll have all of our emails there. And the email is joan.miscino@mahouse.gov. We'd love to hear from you, even just to say hello on policy. And certainly, please do not hesitate. If you need any help whatsoever with a constituent matter, please call us. We're here to help.
Thank you again for joining me.
Absolutely. We'll have to be better about this next time.
Absolutely.
Yes, we'll come in sooner.
We will now step aside just for a few moments. But when we come back, we'll speak with local business owner Richard Rosen. You are tuned in to 95.9 WATD Monday Night Talk. Don't go anywhere.
If you want a drink, that's your business. If you want to stop, that's for Alcoholics Anonymous.
AA is an inclusive fellowship of individuals all around the world. The one thing you need to ask yourself is, am I ready to do something about my drinking problem? For more information, literature, and videos about Alcoholics Anonymous, and to find a meeting near you, call 617-426-9444 or visit AA.org.
You currently have a great opportunity to support local business and get a great deal from local restaurants. The Marshfield Chamber and Marshfield Public Schools are partnering for the Together Marshfield Initiative. Now through February 15th, you can order gift cards through participating restaurants and save money. Every $25 gift card will cost only $20 for dine-in or takeout, for now or later. These cards are a great deal for your family. Be sure to order by the end of the 15th. Choose from participating restaurants at marshfieldchamber.org.
This is Joanne Buchanan from South Shore Folk Music Club at First Parish Duxbury, inviting you to join us on Thursday, February 18th at 7 p.m. for our live Zoom open mic series. Join us for live music, poetry, applause, and good company. Please visit our website at southshorefolkmusicclub.org for further information about our live Zoom open mic and for the Zoom link.
By the middle of the week, so much news has come your way, you need your own team to sort it out. Lucky for you, there's Jared Valenzuela and the JV team to talk about the things you've heard and catch you up on some things you might not know.
I'm Jared Valenzuela. Join me and my guests as we have fun with current events and try to put things into perspective each week. Sponsored by Representative David DeCoste and Corey Welch of Boom Realty. Catch the JV team every Wednesday night at 6:15 here on 95.9 WATD.
Download the Monday Night Talk podcast from iTunes for free. Just search for Monday Night Talk WATD. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
All right, welcome back for yet another segment here on Monday Night Talk, your President's Day holiday edition. And joining us is one of our premier sponsors. We love having our sponsors on. Without our sponsors, who would we be? Especially for nearly 10 years. Joining me right now is none other than Mr. Richard Rosen, fine proprietor of not only McGuigan's Pub, but the patio at McGuigan's, both located in downtown Whitman. And I know you're just coming fresh off of the Valentine's Day weekend. How are you holding up these days?
Good evening, Kevin. It's a pleasure to be with you once again. I still find it hard to believe it's been almost 10 years. But to answer your question, things are well. Things are good. 2 weekends ago, when we had when we went from 25% to 40%, we had the best weekend that we've had in a long time. This past weekend was really, really, really good. You know, people are dying to get out. I see and I talk to a lot of people every night. Being the chief schmoozer, it's what I do. And I'm finding people that haven't been out in months. Some people haven't been out in almost a year. They feel very safe coming to our restaurants because, as you know, I've become like the friggin' COVID Nazi. At the patio, it's big. It's open. It's high ceilings. We are not playing games with the numbers. When we're at 25%, We wouldn't let anybody in at 40%, you know, and we have the little cubicles and stuff at both restaurants and the bar. It was funny. We went out last week to dinner to a local restaurant, and it was amazing. I'm not going to say what restaurant. I haven't been out to many other restaurants in a long time. That there clearly was no social distancing in the restaurant. The bar had these little plastic things, like they had two seats and they were beside you, but there was no protection between you and the bartender, which I believe was one of the rules. I mean, we are playing by the rules at 40%. Sure, the restaurant looks busy, but half my furniture is across the street in the pod. I mean, literally half of my furniture for both restaurants is in storage. But with that being said, things are okay. We're doing better. And, you know, you have to just be able to do what you can do. You know, it's funny. You've heard me say this many times over the years, that in business, to be successful in any business, you've got to be able to roll the punches. You can't be rigid. You've got to be able to change on the fly. And I'm going to tell you, that is exactly what we've been doing almost on a daily, if not weekly basis. My poor daughter has gone through hell, you know, with schedule changes and just because they keep changing the way that you can operate in the hours. But going back to 40% is a big deal. Now, the vaccination program is something I want to talk about later, but that's another issue.
Okay. Well, how have you been holding up? I mean, knowing that it's been like a roller coaster for your business, restaurant business, and other folks who own restaurants and eateries in and around the South Shore, it has to have been taxing to get to here we are nearly a year since COVID arrived on the scene, and we were all trying to figure out what exactly was going on. You know, people were asked to stay at home. Businesses were shuttered. What has it been like going into a year since this all happened for you and businesses like yours?
You know, I feel terrible for a lot of people, but because of what they've had to endure for 11 months, I remember we were talking about this last night. I remember standing in the patio with a couple of people and all the staff gathered around, there was still customers in there, watching the governor speak or whoever it was that was speaking. And I looked around and I said, we're going to be closed tomorrow. And, you know, the employees were crying and the customers were shaking their heads and we were kind of in disbelief. But at that time, we thought it was only going to be a couple of weeks. You know, it is going on a year. And it has been, I mean, clearly it's taken its toll. It's taken its toll on untold businesses and not just, I mean, certainly the restaurant business has taken a beating. All the employees, the servers, so many of them have gone out of business. A lot of other businesses have gone out of business as well. You know, I had a tenant that was a travel agent. It was a 40-year-old business that was passed down from, you know, in the family. They're out of business. It wasn't their fault. It wasn't anything that they did. There's so many, many, many stories. It's been stressful. It's been a tough road to hoe. I feel bad for a lot of people. I'm in better shape. We never closed the pub. We stayed open the whole time after losing the busiest day of the year, St. Patrick's Day, and the busiest month of the year, March. We closed the patio, obviously, but we didn't close the pub and we kept 13 people on the payroll. We did takeout. Our takeout business has been huge. You know, I own my buildings as opposed to some restaurateurs that don't. And the PPP money was helpful. And we're okay. And I think, you know, it sounds crazy, but being the world's biggest optimist, and if you're not an optimist, you don't belong in business. If you're a pessimist, you might as well just close right now and go home. I think we're going to come out of this stronger than ever. It's just, when are we coming out of it? That's the question.
Well, that's an excellent question. And again, if you're just tuned in, we are speaking with a longtime supporter of Monday Night Talk, not only as a sponsor, but someone who has been on the radio program. He is, like I have many, a variety of co-hosts that I have. I joke about Mayor Robert Sullivan being my prototypical co-host. Richie Rosen also fills that same seat as well as being a co-host. I have to ask you, Richard, knowing that we're sitting here, you know, people are being vaccinated by the hundreds, the thousands. You say that you feel that we're coming out of this. Looking at the vaccine program, do you feel that it's going to be anytime soon? Do you feel that we're going to be, you know, the light at the end of the tunnel will no longer just be a light at the end, but we'll actually be into that light we'll be basking in?
The good news is the light at the end of the tunnel is not a train coming at you. I mean, there's potential, unfortunately. And I hear this. I started hearing this from a lot of people in the last week or so. So I've been investigating and asking questions. And the Commonwealth of Massachusetts is doing an absolutely pathetic job in rolling out this vaccination program. Pathetic. The governor can stand there and do his press conferences all day long and tell you what a great job he's doing. He's lying to you. The Harvard Medical School gave the Commonwealth of Mass an F the other day for the rollout program. When you see, for instance, they believe that the way to, I believe that the governor and his minions think that the best way to do this vaccination program, and don't get me wrong, I am not an expert on this, but common sense tells you something screwed up. When you have fire department after fire department after fire department in Whitman, Hanson, Halifax, every town around here on the South Shore, what are they staffed with? Medics, EMTs. They're staffed with some pretty bright guys. They're staffed with good chiefs. These guys have all put in place programs to vaccinate people. In Whitman, for instance, Chief Grenell put a program together. They did all the first responders. They did the firemen. They did the policemen. They did whatever else they did. They did a clinic at the local Knights of Columbus Hall. And I don't know, they did a couple hundred people. But all of a sudden, whoa, we're not giving you any vaccine anymore. So they request 500 doses, they get none. Another town locally requests 300, they get none. This happened last week. So all of a sudden, you have all these people that are ready, willing, and able on a local basis where you don't have to drive to Foxborough, or you don't have to go to Boston, or you don't have to find someone to... That whole getting someone 75 years and older and bringing a caretaker or a driver and giving them a shot is a scam, because those same people could go to Whitman. They could go to Hanson. They could go to Rockland. They could go to a clinic that is being done. They can't get a shot at Mass General. Rockton Hospital has no doses. There's a local fire station that I know that was shipped several hundred doses a week ago today. And before they could do anything with them, they said, don't open those, we're coming to get them. It is outrageous. If people really, I mean, you're starting to see on the news what a cluster this whole thing is. I went on the MDPH site because I was curious how many doses there were in Massachusetts that had been shipped to Massachusetts. And as of last Friday, the other day, 1,503,925 doses had been shipped to Massachusetts. 1,034,000 had actually been distributed, which means that there's 500,000 doses around. So where are they? They're being held out to go to the mass vaccination sites, such as Foxborough, at Gillette Stadium, or Fenway Park, or these other max vaccination places. I guess that there's one in Marshfield. So who wants to go sit outdoors in Marshfield? I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but why do they need to go there when you could have that same thing being done in your backyard, in your town, and in some cases you could walk to where it's being done as opposed to having to drive someplace?
Do you think this is something that's going to further gum up the works? Is this something that we're just hearing in the Commonwealth of Mass, or do you know people? Or is this something that's synonymous across the country right now?
I honestly don't know. The only other state that I followed is Florida. And I believe it or not, the governor there was a complete lunatic. But I believe that they're actually, you know, with all that was said and done about Florida, I think they're running a better program down in Florida. But I'm more concerned about what's going on in Massachusetts. And it's disgusting that you have all these people that have all this hope that want to get vaccinated and they can't because the local towns aren't getting vaccines distributed to them. I mean, Whitman, Hanson, They request a couple hundred doses, they get none. This other town gets 900 doses sent to them, and they don't use them. We're going to pick them up. Where are those 500,000 doses? Why isn't this being done? Again, I'm not an expert. But again, I think I had a discussion with you way back when about the opening committee when the governor was reopening stuff. I don't know where the hell some of these people came from, but when they did the reopening, it wasn't right. You know, obviously the vaccine came out at 9:30. That's why the bars had to close it. The restaurants had to close at 9:30. They changed that. But there's something drastically wrong here. And a number of people are starting to take notice. When I saw a thing about, I think it was Sharon, had set up this big, huge, or Foxborough, some, had set up this great program. Oh, all of a sudden, we don't have any more doses. It's like, what is going on? I just said there's something wrong.
Why does that sound similar to the website for the state to be able to sign up and get a shot? People have long complained over the past few weeks that it's difficult to navigate and that something needs to be done. And I've already seen a couple of stories on local news of folks who are working from home who simply put together a program to be able to have folks easily register to be able to get one of their first two shots. Why is it that government complicates things?
You know, this isn't brain surgery, Kevin. You know, we're talking about running a business. You know, when I sat in the restaurant business, I think people thought that I wouldn't survive because I wasn't, quote, a restaurateur. Well, I've been there 11 years. You know, I don't care how you run things. Common sense dictates most everything, and it clearly is not being shown right now. When you have, I don't know how many fire chiefs are in Massachusetts. I know there's 351 cities and towns, and not all of them have fire chiefs. However many there are, if those guys on a local level, a woman, are ready to stand up a program and vaccinate your residents, Chief Greno, and I know Whitman better than most, and I know Whitman better than other towns, would be able to vaccinate 15,000 people between now and July. Easily. But you can't do 50 people if you don't have vaccines. I don't know. Maybe they overthink it, or maybe they want mass vaccination is not the way to go, because I don't know anybody that wants to drive to Foxborough or Gillette Stadium to get their shot. You know, it just doesn't make any sense to me. There's no common sense to it.
Is it as simple as maybe politics are getting in the way, and maybe there was initially a plan to start distributing them to the local municipalities, but that there's someone behind the scenes who's going, no, don't be sending it to them. Send it to the bigger, you know, venues like Gillette, like Fenway Park, and anywhere else where you can have a mass gathering of people to be able to do a higher quantity of folks who are going to get the vaccine.
What's the old saying? If it looks like a duck and it walks like a duck, it's a duck. I might have screwed that up. But you are absolutely right. There's no question about it in my mind. You know, and generally in 10 years, you and I have not talked a lot of politics, and I don't like to talk politics. But this is so outrageous that, and I see it every day at the restaurants and talking to people, that nobody knows what's going on. It's just a total cluster out there. Mm. And I frankly believe that it's not only politics, it's pretty bad, stupid politics.
Do you think that it's only on the state level, or could there be an issue in regards to the transition from one administration to a new incoming with Joe Biden and Kamala Harris?
No, I don't think that has anything to do with it, Kevin. If you look at the numbers that I got off the Mass DPH site, and you had 1.5 million doses Friday, and only 1 million have been put in people's arms, why the hell can't they? But Whitman can't get any doses. Brockton Hospital can't get any doses. Mass General just said, we can't give any more shots. All these area towns, we can't get any more doses. It's Massachusetts. It's not any presidential transition. You've got 500,000 doses that are floating around someplace, but they seem to have a couple thousand over there, and they have a couple thousand over here. And it's wrong. It's just wrong.
Well, unfortunately, I wish we had more time because I had more questions, but let's wrap this up on a positive note. Folks want to, looking to be a part of the 40% that can find its way over to McGuigan's Pub or over to the patio, how can they find out more about the menu or hours of operation?
They can find out more by having me on again soon and not talking about politics, which is completely what I didn't want to talk about. But our hours, we're open. We're not open Mondays. I don't even know. Some guy called me the other day and said, are you open for lunch? No, we open at 4. No, we were open for lunch. It was like Saturday or something. We have the McGuigan's Pub website. Telephone number is 781-447-7333. We have the patio at McGuigan's website, 781-447-2525. And I have some breaking news that I about the patio. I can't tell you right now. I'm going to have to leave that as what they call a tease for the next time on.
Okay.
I'll have some breaking news for you regarding the patio.
Here he is, Richard Rosen, the proprietor of McGuigan's Pub and the patio at McGuigan's, located in downtown Whitman, leaving us with a tease, talking vaccination and going from 25 to 40%. Richard, thank you again.
Kevin, it's always a pleasure. I'm sorry we got off track, but we'll talk soon.
We're going to step aside. That's going to do it for hour number one of Monday Night Talk. When we come back, hour number two, we'll speak with Bishop Tony Branch in just a few moments. You're listening to Monday Night Talk here at 95.9 WATD.
WATD FM Marshfield, WBMS Brockton. This is the South Shore's radio station, 95.9 FM WATD. Streaming online at 95.9WATD.com. And with your smart speaker, just by saying play WATD. This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi, on 95.9 WATD.
Dad, you think UFOs will ever come?
Well, I'm not sure they've ever been invited.
Can we invite them?
Yeah, but how?
Well, we've got a flat roof and Christmas light strings. We can spell out UFOs land here.
Well, I'll tell you what, I'll hold the ladder for you.
Later that night, there arose such a clatter.
Dad, look out on the lawn! A UFO with a broken windshield!
Wow, better call Tiny and Sons. They'll replace that windshield and insurance pays.
Do space aliens have insurance?
Oh, they wouldn't leave home without it.
I'm Peter Brown from Tiny and Sons Auto Glass in Pembroke. Our service is out of this world. Just call 1-888-64-TINIES. And thank you.
In honor of President's Day, Dell delivers savings to help America's small businesses get more done. Office anywhere, with up to 50% off high-performance laptops, desktops, and servers with Intel Core processors and top-brand electronics. Plus, refresh now with flexible financing options. Call 877-ASK-DELL for a Dell Technologies advisor who can help you find the right tech. That's 877-ASK-DELL or visit dell.com/President's Day.
Mike, room 4 is ready to go. Like, now?
Indeed knows unexpected growth can stretch your business thin.
Kelly, room 2 needs to be...
Like at Dr. Moore's dermatology practice. To keep pace with new patients, he needs to get started hiring right away.
I need Indeed.
Indeed you do. And the moment you sponsor a job on Indeed, you get a short list of quality candidates from our resume database. Visit Indeed.com/credit and get a $75 credit for your first sponsored job post. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi, I'm Caroline from the Marshfield Environmental Association. Marshfield has some of the most beautiful beaches in Massachusetts. During the off-season, please help us keep our beaches clean. Remember to dispose of any PPE properly, including face masks and gloves, along with any other trash. If you carry it in, please carry it out. With your help, all of our beaches will be ready to enjoy this coming summer. For more information and for upcoming beach cleanup dates, please follow Marshfield Environmental Association on Facebook. Thank you.
Hey everybody, Mikey G here, host of Americanorama, nights on WATD. Alt country, roots, bluegrass, urban folk, country rock, and more. A show of musical discovery. Tonight at 10, only on 95.9 WATD.
This is Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
We return for yet another segment here on Monday Night Talk. It is the President's Day holiday, but it is also Black History Month. Mm-hmm. joining us for this particular segment, I have had this gentleman on numerous times for all kinds of different conversations. And it doesn't necessarily just doesn't speak to equality or race or racism. But we talk about a lot of different things. He is a host of his own radio show, co-host. Also, last I remember, he was the chairman of the City of Brockton's Diversity Commission. And he is somebody who is, when we were seeing a lot of conversations last year in regards to George Floyd, systematic racism, Tony was kind enough to have a conversation with us here on Monday Night Talk. And the conversations do not have to be comfortable, because he has said that on past shows that we need to have a conversation and it may get uncomfortable. Tony, welcome back to the radio program.
Thank you for having me, Kevin. And I'm praying that you're safe and your family members are safe as we go, as we continue to go through this pandemic, even though there is a process for vaccination that will hopefully hit every citizen by July of 2021, according to our president. But thank you for having me on the show.
How have you been holding up throughout the pandemic?
It's been tough. I mean, the fact that I'm healthy, my children are healthy, family members are healthy, I don't think I have a right to complain. I must say, I think that I'm doing well, if in fact that I haven't been necessarily directly impacted by some health concerns. So I'm not going to complain at all.
Same here. I made sure that I wiped everything down before we did our radio segment. So you're going to be safe and secure, even though we are remotely having this conversation. You got to love technology. And I feel as though that because of the pandemic, we have become a little bit more aware when it comes to technology.
Right.
So again, as I restate, the purpose of having you here is to talk about Black History Month, the importance of Black History Month. Give me your thoughts on the creation of Black History Month and what it means to African-Americans, folks of color, and maybe even folks who may not be of African-American descent, but, you know, feel as though that recognition needs to be paramount and across the boards for everybody of certain ethnicities.
Right, right. So, I mean, well, let's give a little bit of history. 1875, Carter Woodson, a Harvard University graduate, is what we call the father of Black history. But in the official sense, this holiday has been recognized, I believe, since 1970, officially maybe around 1975. And it's been recognized between the dates of both the late President Lincoln's birthday as well as Frederick Douglass. What's interesting about Black History Month is that it is a month. you and I know, and most people know that are part of this listening audience. I mean, Black history is indelibly America. The fact remains is that the history of the former slave belt, the economic conditions that had catapulted the United States into an economic power. So there is significant history. It's important for us to celebrate it because there's been so many negatives. Kevin, let's be honest about it. There's really, really been so many negatives, especially coming out of slavery, especially when you look at systemic racism, especially when we fast forward to 2020, when we look at the murder of George Floyd. So I'm glad that people are focusing on the holiday this year, especially because of our fight against institutionalized racism and our fight against state-sponsored killing of Black men that are unarmed, unfortunately, by police officers. I'm glad people are really focusing on it. But I'm hoping that people, when they say Black history, that you say it like this: we're celebrating Black history, which is America's history. I think that we need to get to that point. Listen, I know you want to talk about Black history, but one of the things that I've said in the last 6 months of training people as a consultant with respect to diversity, equity, and inclusion is that we need to get away from, my goal, my prayer is that we get away from the EEOC categories of race in the United States, that we really begin a process that we reflect each other as Americans, not by our race, not by our religion, but the fact that we have a common goal is guaranteed under the Bill of Rights in our Constitution.
How can that happen? How can that happen in this day and age when it's still a struggle to recognize that Black Lives Matter, and when I say Black history, let's not forget that any history book that's picked up,
right?
I'm sure that you could pick up three different history books, and history could be written in different ways. It will omit certain individuals who were essential to America, Americana, and how we grew as a nation.
Right. So one of the examples, we look at a Garrick Morgan, who invented the traffic light, and people are like, no, Bishop, you're wrong. So we look at inventors. There was another woman, Mary Britton. She invented eventually what we're using now for ADT, for the alarm systems in my homes. There's a whole host of scientific inventors from the Black community that are not spoken about. And I think that one of my pastor's friends said something that was very important when he was teaching us a couple of years back. Is he says that the folks that are most impacted by not knowing this is our white children, who are not knowing the truth around the importance of Black history, and often hearing so much that is negative as portrayed in the media, and as portrayed actually also in social media. But to your question, we get there. And I buy that we get there through love. I'm not dismissing Dr. King with respect to love. And I think that when America begins to change its heart, begins to change its heart, this is when we are going to be able to move this nation into in a direction that really, really does what? That births what is on paper, that becomes a reality. And I think once that happens, I've said it in my trainings. I've said it that white people must solve it. and Kevin, the reason why I say white people must solve it is because those that are benefactors of the system must be able to finally say, we got to let other people in. And I think that's the struggle right now. It's uncomfortable to have these conversations. One of the things that I wanted to do with respect to Black history, I know we're going to be doing a program that I'm a panelist on at the Brockton Public Library on patriotism. One of the things that I'm hoping to do when we look at the Black History Month is really getting to the point where you're going, how are we going to have these conversations with the larger constituency that is not offensive? And one of the things that I've said in some of my training programs is I'll point my finger. I was like, there's racists in here. And people will literally drop out of their chairs. And that reaction is the automatic reaction that employers are having when they've been called a racist, when friends are having when they've been called a racist. So what we're attempting to do now is let's stop calling people racist and really talk about how institutional racism impacts Blacks and Latinx in this country. Nobody wants to be called names, Kevin, and we've learned that in this political sphere. Nobody wants to be called names. And I think that when we began to develop how to have the conversation, we will be successful. I'm sorry, that's a long answer.
What I like to tell my audience is what's important about this program, what's important about a good radio segment is while you can have a host who can opine about a particular subject, I feel that my job I'm the facilitator of this conversation, and my job is to ask you pertinent questions. And my job is also, once I've asked that question, is to step back and step out of the way and let you give the fullest answer, because nobody wants to necessarily hear my opinion. They want to hear the expert's opinion. They want to hear the opinion of the individual who lives it, who knows it, who has studied it, who has worked with other people who have been involved with it.
And Kevin, Kevin, you've kept to your word. This month is important not only, again, to talk about scientific inventors, but also to talk about the state of Black Americans as we stand now. We just saw, now we often talk about George Floyd. You know, I'm vice chair of the Southeastern Regional School Committee. I sponsored a resolution that was completely supported by my colleagues around the George Floyd murder. And I'm one of two people of color that is on that board. And so anyone to say that we are not making strides, it's not truthful. And I look at the work that the Coalition in Bridgewater is doing. Majority white community, I think 1 or 2% Black, they're moving forward on this conversation. Again, this is a conversation, what makes this conversation patriotic is when people don't see the flag as Black or white, but really see it based upon the richness of the red and the blue and those stars. And when we get to that point, and I think we're gonna see a lot of this in our lifetime, we're gonna be able to really have that conversation around the wrongs without people being so intense and so defensive, if I can add that.
Okay, we're speaking with Bishop Tony Branch. He is our guest here on this portion of Monday Night Talk, talking a little bit about Black history, the importance of recognizing Black history and making sure that it is a part of the record moving forward, for not only for all to know, but also for kids who are growing up and who will understand it. It's not going to be lost in stories that are told by our grandparents or great-grandparents, but it's something that will be part of the permanent record so that kids can strive for. You know, in our lifetime, we have seen a Black president. In our lifetime, we have seen a Black vice president, a female Black vice president. You know, there are more strides. There's more that needs to be done moving forward to get Tony Branch co-host of his own radio program. And he is the chair of the City of Brockton's Diversity Commission as we sit here and talk. You know, we've talked a little bit about, again, it is Black History Month.
Right.
Why just a month? Why settle just for one month?
Well, this is the struggle. Now, we get that the recognition was required because of the Black contributions. And because one of the things that Black History Month does, it gives us an official opportunity to really dismiss a lot of the negatives that have been portrayed against Black people. And it gives us an opportunity to really look at the contributions of African Americans and those of Caribbean descent. We don't want to leave them out as well. We look at Walter Tall, the first Black officer to command British troops. People don't really realize that Black History Month is also celebrated in Canada, is also celebrated in London. We look at Olive Morris, a social activist who co-founded the Organization of African American Women and the Britain Black Women's Group. So there's been significant contributions of Black people to the science and the political sphere. And ultimately, we look at the election of President Barack Obama, who none of us, come on, let's be honest, I never thought I would see a Black president in the United States, not in my lifetime. I thought maybe it would be my grandchildren. So again, the election of President Obama, with respect to the election of Governor Deval Patrick here in the Commonwealth, with respect to the election of Senator Ed Brooke here in the Commonwealth, and with respect to the election of Congressman Presley, the first Black congressional person here in the Commonwealth. We are making progress. I think the problem is, Kevin, the progress is too doggone slow. I know that I'm sick and tired of really hearing the first, even in 2020, 2019, you still are hearing the first African-American to achieve neuroscience. We're still on the first in this country, and I think that we can do a lot better. By 2044, there will be officially no racial groups. I think it's by 2044, we'll be completely brown, or at least no one will be able to have a monopoly on the discussion of majority minority. Or I think by 20 94, the country will have no group that can say that they're black or white. So let me just say this to folks. If you look at any of the advertisement from a Macy's, from a Burlington Coat Factory, look in any magazine, you have seen for the last, watch this, 20 years, you'll see white grandparents, black grandchildren. They have been marketing the demographic change for two decades. I'm not sure why psychologically America hasn't caught up to that. We knew that, we saw that in marketing, we saw that in advertisement where we were going. So everybody knows that the nation is browning. The real stumbling block is, and I don't want to get into politics, but the real stumbling block is that our my Archie Bunkers are my President Trumps. And I'm going to say this because black people get mad at me when I say this. President Trump was not wrong what he said about black people in the inner city with respect to one particular political party. So I say to people, when you look at the fact that President Trump had such a dramatic increase of black men voting for him, that's because he tells it like it is. And that telling it like it is actually attractive to African Americans. It really is. Maybe to our detriment at times. But my point to you is this, is that this work on the political scene, both parties to be done, there's work in the judiciary, and there's work in social programs, these nonprofits that are supposed to be supporting social justice within our community. There's work among everyone. So let's stop pointing the fingers and let's celebrate the richness of African Americans and those from the Caribbeans during the month of February and every other month thereafter. But there has to be a change in the curriculum in the schools, and that's one of the things that I've been advocating for, and that's one of the program milestones that we're going to attempt at the United States Black School Committee members are really working on changing the history book so it accurately reflects black history from not only in America, but also in Europe. Let's not forget about the Moors.
I was going to say, my question to you is it's interesting that these days, a lot of times, folks who were in education and retire out usually become proponents and usually salespeople for folks who are out there marketing educational information in different ways to teach, whether it's mathematics,
yes,
whether it's history, whether it's English comp. They're out there marketing and they're out there pushing their individual companies, their way of teaching, yep, and how it's being told. How do we not try to find a way to bring education and information all under one umbrella so it's all being told the same way?
Well, very good question. Thank you for it. I asked that question of Representative Kennedy when he was running for Senate. One of the things that I've said is I'm not sure why the Department of Education doesn't have a working group to mandate the history books in the United States of America. I'm not sure. It's left up to local school committees. Literally, and this is why in Georgia and some of the southern states, you had some pretty, I don't want to start a fight on your show, but you had some pretty interesting chapters regarding black people and some of the history books down there. And that's where a lot of this actually work is coming from black school committee members to make these significant changes, because these policies are dictated by local school boards. But with that said, I'm for a better mandate or a mandate through the Department of Education, having a working group, I think there should be some congressional regulations. This is why I mentioned this to Senator, to Representative Kennedy when he was running, because what we need, Kennedy and Markey were coming out to the black community, and a lot of us were asking questions. And this is one of the questions I posed just for purposes of clarification, because one of the things that we've noticed is that if you're going to support us, since George Floyd, and I said that for a reason, because it seems that this is how progressives and liberals the light has shined really to get involved. If you're going to support us, you really need to begin by changing the imagery of African Americans in the history books of the United States of America. I mean, you open some of them today, Kevin, and they still show black females open breast with a fig leaves in their mouth or leave or cutting or take, you know, working out in the field. That's horrible. That's horrible.
But again, if you're just tuned in, we are speaking with Bishop Tony Branch, radio personality, also presides over a diversity commission in the city of Brockton. We're talking about this month. It is Black History Month, month of February. And we're honestly, when Tony and I sit down and have these conversations, the idea of it is to be free-flowing, to let there be emotions and let the thought process take place. And you get to tune in and listen to it as it's happening. Am I right?
Absolutely.
So what I wanted to ask you, you had mentioned about the previous administration. Yep. We had Joe Biden's wife, an educator herself.
Yep.
Can we see strides in the right direction when it comes to educational material and educational reform?
I believe we have. Well, let's back up a little bit.
All right.
We don't have a choice, Kevin.
That's true.
Very true. And one of the things that I was talking to a colleague yesterday is that the time, I'm talking to a white colleague, the time is now. That the Biden administration has to take the mantle of moving this nation forward in the dismantlement of institutionalized racism. You know, I understand that there's economic concerns, and I'm not going to dismiss that. And when I say that, people, please don't get mad, audience, don't get mad. Quite frankly, white men don't want to give up power. I mean, that's where we are. Fortunately, the wives have a different position, who are raising another generation of white males and white girls, that they don't want to see this sort of institutionalized racism. They don't want to see this injustice. This is why when I'm talking to people that have this such a negative view of the greatest republic in the world, I have to push back on you. I don't want to be anywhere else other than America, because I know that when America fixes it, it'll resonate across the entire world. So people just need to be mindful that the conversation has to be had. A and B, to your question, I think we have a better chance under the Biden administration. You know, Joe's coming. Well, and I was supportive of Joe. Joe's come a long ways now. So Joe has had some history. The stuff that the vice president now, Harris, said was not inaccurate. He's had some history. But again, we need white men like him that have had not only a change of heart, but have had a change that is so dramatic politically that is able to help us dismantle this institution.
As we get ready to wrap up this particular segment, and Tony, I thank you very much for being a part of it and being a part of the ongoing and continuing conversation. Anything that you want to leave my audience with, just to keep in mind, whether it is a Caucasian, whether it is somebody of another ethnicity, whether it is an up-and-coming African-American black male or female, what would you like to leave as an impression just as to the thought process while they are realizing and they are soaking in this particular Black History Month?
Well, my thoughts are, I look at Nobel Peace Prize nominee Stacey Abrams. I look at the fact that Black women, specifically in South Carolina, brought Joe back. I can call him Joe. Brought Joe back in terms of his presidential campaign. What I want to leave you all with is this: African Americans, at this point, probably for the next decade, will decide the presidential elections. Yeah, it's absolutely true, especially with respect to the Democratic Party. But I want you all to do, what I would like for everyone to do, is to look at personal heroes that are both white and black, and to realize that they contribute so positively to the inspiration and the energy of the movement for social justice in the United States, that they too should be celebrated equally during this month. So I look at my families in Bridgewater, and I say this all the time on my program and on Facebook. When I look at what the work that white families are doing in the Bridgewaters, when I look at what is happening in many families in the city of Brockton, when I see the movement of what is happening in Brookline, Massachusetts, when I look at how the support of the city councilor in Everett, the black city councilor who's undergoing tremendous pain for being outspoken. And when I look at, quite frankly, Tina Cardoso in the city of Brockton that is having some equal pain because of being outspoken, that these are our heroes that we need to celebrate and protect. So as we leave in terms of Black History Month, I just want folks to know that it's just not a month, that we are the soil of America. And you know, you can't get rid of that soil because it is required in order for us to have growth. Kevin, thank you for having me here on your show today.
Who would you say, I can't let you off that easy. Mm-hmm. Who would you say, and I'm sure you have many of them, yeah, if you were to pick one out for this conversation, a hero of yours?
Oh, why did you have to do that?
That's why I said, I know you have many. Yeah, and it might be tough to choose one.
My hero, I have five that come to mind, but I have to really stick with those that have put it on the line and have lost their life. And that's going to have to be Dr. King. And the reason why I say that is because I often, in the last couple of months, when I've done is looked at his readings, especially the letter when he was in prison, and I think about how he tried to how he actually prayed and went and sought for the support of other religious leaders during the struggle, and how he didn't really get the bandwidth that he thought he would get. That's a similar struggle that a lot of us are going through in the faith-based movement. Although we've made some good strides recently, it's been hard. So Dr. King sticks in my mind because he understood the struggle and he died for it. And the things that he talked about, unfortunately, we continue to live today because love has not been the mantle of many people's hearts.
He is Tony Branch. He's been our guest for this particular segment, and I'm pretty sure he'll be back for many, many more in the near future. Tony, thank you again for joining us.
God bless you. Thank you, Kevin, to you and your family.
You got it. All right, we're going to step aside for a couple of moments, but when we come back, more Monday Night Talk. Actually, we have a surprise. You know the gentleman who actually hosts The People's Truth? That's right, Ben Rabbit. He's going to be joining us in just a few moments here on 95.9 WATD. You're tuned into Monday Night Talk.
What is AA? Alcoholics Anonymous is an international fellowship of men and women who've had a drinking problem.
It is non-professional and self-supporting.
AA is multiracial, apolitical, and available almost everywhere.
There are no age or education requirements. Membership is open to anyone who wants to do something about their drinking problem.
Call 617-426-9444 or find online meetings at aa-intergroup.org.
I'll be right there. We got to redo the whole thing.
Indeed knows unexpected growth can stretch your business thin.
Need to finish these today.
Like at Phil's Machine Shop. To keep carving out more revenue, he needs to get started hiring right away.
I need Indeed.
Indeed you do. And the moment you sponsor a job on Indeed, you get a short list of quality candidates from our resume database. Visit Indeed.com/credit and get a $75 credit for your first sponsored job post. Terms and conditions apply.
Gary is refinancing his home, so he shopped around for the lowest rate and found it at Amerisave.com, setting him up for a lifetime of savings. It's one decision he'll never regret, unlike taking that gig in the testing lab at the deodorant company.
Raise your arm, please. Oh, man, I hate this job.
Pretty regrettable, Gary. Unlike finding that low mortgage rate at Amerisave.com that's got you on your way to a lifetime of savings. Amerisave's rates won't be this low forever, so go to Amerisave.com now. Lower mortgage rates mean higher savings. Call 866-514-SAVE or visit Amerisave.com/licensing for cost information, terms, and conditions. Equal housing lender. Licensed in all states except New York. NMLS number 1168.
Hi, I'm Beth Lyons with South Shore Habitat for Humanity. Our mission is to build strength, stability, and self-reliance through shelter by partnering with families in need of affordable housing. We're located in Weymouth, Massachusetts. To get involved or make a donation, please visit our website at sshabitat.org or call 781-337-7744. Thank you, and please continue to support amazing nonprofit organizations on the South Shore.
The People's Truth, a show dedicated to bringing communities together and keeping the truth alive. Join your host, me, Benny Rabbi, as we talk with businesses, organizations, and people around New England and the world in search of the People's Truth. Join us tonight at 9 p.m. on 95.9 WATD.
Welcome back to Monday Night Talk. Don't just listen, say something. Call 781-837-4900. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
We return to the final segment of Monday Night Talk. As I have done traditionally, I got to say, while it's fun and fantastic to speak with folks from in and around the Commonwealth of Massachusetts, anywhere in the 50, 51 states, around the globe. It's great to have great guests, but I have to tell you, we have some fantastic in-house talent that I have been fortunate enough to interview over the years. We're starting at the very top of the heap, the pile of talent, Ed Perry, who can forget the guy who created this radio station, the guy who in his youth loved and excelled at having a pirate radio station, brags about it as well. But speaking to the great people like Mike Joshua, who's had Christine James on, not to mention some of our dearly departed friends like Dave Skill. Well, tonight is no different. It's not somebody who's departed. It's somebody who's still with us. Actually, he is a rising star here in the WATD family of radio stations or the radio network that Ed Perry has been building. You're probably scratching your head saying, what are you talking about, radio network? Well, other than the parent station, Broadcast House, 95.9 WATD, we have 1460 WDMS serving the Brockton Metro South, and the longtime signal back in its heyday was one heck of a signal. Ed Perry found this gem and decided to put it back on the dial. What am I talking about? 1510 WMEX, the home of the good guys. And joining me is a gentleman who is one of the good guys, as you can hear him, I believe, Monday through Friday. He's the afternoon drive time guy. He also does a fantastic job calling hockey. Who am I talking about? None other than Mr. Ben Rabbi.
It's a pleasure to be with you, Kevin, here on Monday Night Talk.
Well, now, it's also known that you have been my longtime producer. So you are, if you go into a restaurant, he isn't just the guy who runs the restaurant, so to speak, but he's also the maitre d'. He's also the guy, the waiter, and he might even be the sous chef or the executive chef that evening. I would say that you wear that many hats, right?
It's true. There's so many hats. It's hard to wear that many on one head. But somehow we pull it off and we keep the ball rolling. But it's been really a fun experience being part of the WATD, the WMEX network, and just doing all the things that I've gotten involved with. So thank you for having me on your show tonight, Kevin. I've been with you here for almost every show for the last 3 years on Monday nights. So it's a pleasure to actually be on the mic side with you.
And it's also worth noting that it hasn't been omitted or left out, but he also has his own talk show that is on Monday nights. I believe it's at 9 p.m., The People's Truth, with starring the one and only Ben Rabbi. Ben, what is it about radio that you like?
I mean, it's much like the some of the rest of us that get into this business. It's a lifelong passion, and I'm happy to say to you that I can confirm that. My father before me was a radio personality down at a neighboring station. And for many years, that's what he did. That's how he made his living. And then I came along and he said, oh, geez, I got to start making some actual loot here. So I said, someday, Dad, I'm going to pick up where you left off. And, you know, from those early years, it somehow just stayed with me, and a little bit of practice here and there. Finally, an opportunity came after Bill Wilhelm in the sports department here at WATD said, hey, we need someone on. And hey, who are you? Come on in here for a sec. Let's have a sit down. Next thing you know, I'm on the air, and it's been a wonderful experience thus far. So, and I'm happy to continue to pay homage to, like I said, my father being a radio guy before it and being exposed to the records and all the great music from back way before my time, only 33 years old. So it's crazy how I've gotten involved with WMEX and Larry Justice and all the things that I've gotten my hands into these days. It's a wild ride, to say the least.
And what did your dad do? Was your dad strictly just a radio disc jockey? Was he just a guy? Was he a radio personality? What was he?
He was. So he was an on-air personality. He dabbled in the sales side of things for a while. But, you know, radio in the 1980s was a far different beast than it is today. That is for sure and for certain. And, you know, he had a great career. He was on air probably about 10, 15 years, all said and done, before he finally ended up moving on. But yeah, he did a little bit of all. You know, we have sit-down conversations still about how he used to set up his gear at these remotes. And, you know, he would have the guests come in. He'd interview them. He'd do the whole nine yards, the whole show and dance. And yeah, it's really been helpful to me here in 2021, especially trying to figure out, you know, what are my roots still and how can I help keep that same message alive? And Kevin, I'm happy to report it's a very simple, easy message. It's all about the people. It's about your listeners and it's about being their friend and making sure that you're available to them in that regard. You know, anyone can just call up a radio station and request a song, but it's a whole different story when you feel like, hey, my buddy Ben's on the radio and I'm going to call him up right now and he'll play a song for me. I guarantee it. And it's been really fun to be able to be a part of that for people.
And if we can, let's, there's a little bit of a montage that we actually have put together. If you are new to Ben Rabbi or even hearing Ben on the air, maybe you've heard him in one form or another. And I believe that what we're about to hear is we're going to hear a little bit of everything. It's a smorgasbord of Ben that we're going to share right now.
There, here's Polito. Let's it fly off the crossbar. Nearly had it. They'll try again. Here's John Polito. Back over. Polito, wrist shot into a body out front.
Still 35 seconds left in the power play for Abington.
Still battling away as the first one expired. Top of the hash. Wrist shot scores! John Polito picks the pocket. And the senior captain puts the Abington Green Wave up top by one. Tim Ward cuts in over the line, gets barreled off. That one up scores! Joseph Daly, the junior, catches one in motion and beats Merrick topside, 13-17. Hingham now with a step. Here they come. And on Prendergast, left side, that one rockets high off the stick of Catherine Caro. And a bunch of bodies flying over the line. Hingham now with a break. If they can hurry, here's an opportunity coming in on the backhand. Prendergast out.
Oh!
What a save by Prendergast from left to right. Makes the squared eagle save on the right pad. That's going to end up on every highlight reel for the next 10 years.
That was insane. I don't know how she was able to scramble back to the other post.
So, yeah, that was a little compilation of a couple of the calls that I've had recently and over the last couple of seasons in WATD and working with you, Abington Cam, and all kinds of other places that I found myself behind the microphone. And again, it's about the kids. It's about the parents and just being able to share this with everybody. It's really been a passion.
Is there one area that you feel that eventually you're going to gravitate towards? Again, talk show host. You're a guy who's spinning the yesterday's hits, calling games. Is there one direction that you find yourself wanting to focus on, or do you like having the variety of doing each and every one of these jobs?
My favorite motion is forward. That is for sure. So, I mean, it's whatever that keeps it on, keeping it on. And I'm a very passionate person when it comes to the engineering side and producing. I mean, I've been producing at WATD now after 6 p.m. for about 3 years now. Go figure, time's just flying by. Mm-hmm. And I've been given recently the title of executive producer at WMEX, helping Larry Justice put together all the bits and pieces that make the halls of justice shine the way it does. So again, it just comes back down to an overall passion. Anything to do with entertaining, informing, putting product in front of people in the best light possible. That's what I really like to do. And you know, they say if you enjoy what you do, you never work a day in your life. And it's been a few years now, Kev, and I definitely feel like I've done some stuff, but work, not one of them.
What was it like initially when 1510 WMEX was launched and you were part of the morning show? You were helping folks. Once we drifted away from the South Shore's morning news, you know, at 9:15, the halls of justice would open up and songs would be played and Larry would interact and not only interact with his audience, but interact with you. What was that like?
That was truly an eye-opening experience. I mean, it's one thing to be on air at all. It's a whole nother to be working with a literal legend of the industry. And when he starts saying things like, my buddy Ben, when he starts addressing it, it's a real shock. And for the first couple of months, I mean, it was a complete and total culture shock to me because obviously we all know the great music that we play. And it's wonderful to have that back on the airwaves. But when he starts throwing it out there and you got to make sure you stay with him because especially in the early days, he would say the record and I got to find the record real quick. And there were some spelling things. I mean, the very first song he asked me for was Red Rubber Ball by Circle. Now, if you're not aware, Circle is spelt with a Y and a K. Now, I didn't know that the first time around. So here I am. Mr. Justice, it's not here. I don't have that record. We have that record. Look again. I'm telling you, I don't think. Oh, here it is. So little things like that really jumped out quickly. But, you know, again, if it's a passion, you find a way to make it work. And that's exactly what I did. And I'm very grateful to Larry, the entire WMEX crew, and the WATD crew for allowing me to have that position and allowing me to grow within it. You know, we hear from our listeners every day nowadays. Here we are. It's been 9 months of the School of Justice, as we call it. And I mean, at this point, I'm still a new on-air personality, if you will. Very unrefined, self-admittedly. But we have fun. You know, and we go up on air nowadays and we just, it's what it's all about is the people. And I will sit there for the entire length of my show taking request after request after request simply for the people.
Interesting that you say that. Who were some of the individuals, the radio personalities, the disc jockeys that you've listened to over the years, whether it was on your car stereo or at home, or listening online, or maybe even walking the halls of WATD MEX? Is there anybody in particular that you've listened to them and been like, I'm amazed at how, other than Larry, because I know you have a great relationship with Larry and a kinship with him, but I'm sure that there are other jocks, other personalities that you've listened to and said to yourself, how does he do it?
You know, I'm glad you asked that, Kevin, and there absolutely is. WATD, especially, no shortage of great on-air personalities. And I've been very privileged to be able to listen to the likes of Rob Hakala every morning on the South Shore's Morning News. Lisa Azizian, same thing. And then you start looking at the nighttime stuff. Mikey G, Mike Joshua. I mean, when I met Mike Joshua, when he first got into the fray, goodness, what's it been, almost two plus years now, almost the same?
Yep.
I mean, I listened to his show for the first time, and I said, wow, almost like you just said, how does this guy do it? That's great. I didn't even know you could do radio like that. Of course, Peter Black, The Wide World of Blues, before that, a mainstay, 27 years on the airwaves at WATD doing the overnight blues show. I mean, getting to meet him, he's probably one of the first DJs, I can say, Kevin, that I listened to before I was in radio, before this was a active career. And it was really cool to be able to meet him and learn from him behind the scenes and just experience that entire segment of time, I guess, because it was a very unique time to be there. you know, with Peter especially, right around the same time I ended up on the WATD crew officially, is around the same time his show closed up finally. So it was a unique experience and almost like a passing of the torch, if you would. And I still am in touch with Peter today. And obviously I talk with Mikey G, yourself and Rob and everybody on a daily basis now. And it's wonderful to be able to say, I have this great network of people around me to learn from. Because let's face facts, I'm a youngin' here and I am still far from the truest form of professional. But hey, you know, we like to do what we do. And as we said, it's a passion project. And I'm just very grateful to have the likes of those people to listen to learn from, and adapt and evolve myself based solely on that.
And we're speaking with Benny Rabbi. He wears many hats when it comes to the media, whether he's doing the call of a game. And as he mentioned earlier, he had mentioned, not only does he do the call of the game for the WATD sports department, and it's more just audio because he does an audio and visual element to it. He's done it for local cable studios in and around the South Shore. Again, a fixture on the morning show on 1510 WMEX, and also now his own person during afternoon drive time. And later on today, later on tonight, you'll get to hear The People Truth with Ben and his special guest. And we'll get a little tease as to who he has on this evening, and it'll give him a chance to pimp them properly. It's funny you mention certain personalities. Myself, the one person who is always, I've always had an interest in, because I've listened to him for many years, whether it was me coming in as a reporter nearly 20 years ago, and I'd come in and I'd have to cut up sound on the 360, and he would be on, and he would play Ringo at like 9:30, and he would have this great way, a presentation that you would know, you know, this song, you know, it's on the B-side, and, you know, it wasn't supposed to be a hit, but it ended up becoming a hit. Who am I talking about? The great Ron Dwyer, mm-hmm. who has been all around the dial, whether it's Kiss, to being on our radio station. He's been a mainstay in radio for many, many years. So when you talk about the different people, it's interesting that you get to walk and talk with these different people who have won awards, like a Rob Hackle, like a Christine James, you name it. It's interesting that all these people put their heart and soul into better informing and educating people who are tuned into the radio dial. And especially when there's a winter storm, there's nobody better than your transistor radio in 95.9 WATD or even 1510 WMEX.
That's right. And especially at 12 o'clock noon every day, it's a simulcast. So it's cool the way that it all works out nowadays, especially where we're just one big family, one big network, but we all still go off in the day, do our own individual things, but we always come right back around. And to your point, you know, Ron Dwyer, especially, great guy to learn from, great guy to be around. And, you know, he's been doing it for a long time for a reason. You know, typically, folks, if you see someone in this spot, in that chair, when they've been doing it for 30, 40 years, it's not because they're still learning. It's not because they're winging it from the seam of their pants either. It's because they actually are talented, informing people music-wise. And Ron's a great example of that. So thank you for bringing him up as well.
You know, the other thing I wanted to ask you is how did you get your chops to calling a hockey game? And I asked you this, and I give you a tip of the cap, because you actually did a call of a game for a local center I work for. I work for Abington Community Access and Media, and I actually called upon you to team up with Matt Mad Dog Nelson to call one of our hockey games. And we got such a positive feedback, you know, parents from a neighboring community knowing that they were going to be playing Abington actually asked us to do their home game with the dynamic duo of Rabbi and Mad Dog. It was interesting. How did you get your chops calling games?
Well, truth be told, Kevin, there's no secret to it. You either love what you do or you fake it till you make it. And in my case, I love what I do. I've been a lifelong hockey fan my whole life. And, you know, as a kid, I knew that's what I wanted to do. So all those years of sitting there playing video games and playing over and over and over again, especially, you know, when I was just turning teenage years, online video gaming had just hit the mainstream, and that was a big thing. So I found myself playing full-length hockey games online across the world with people from Canada, from Europe, from you name it. I've played a game with them almost every continent. And, you know, some people, the feedback is really what was key. A lot of people would just say, hey, man, that's kind of annoying. Stop right there, please. And others would just be like, this is amazing. I don't even care if I'm losing 5-0 to you. Keep going. You know, and years and years and years of that, coupling it with then, you know, getting into the high school levels, you know, volunteer here and there. You do a couple of games. And the next thing you know, you start developing a system for yourself and you know what works and what doesn't. You know what you need. And everybody's different in that regard. And especially hockey play-by-play, it's so tough mentally to keep going. A lot of folks, you know, they try it, you know, just trying to get their feet wet in it, and they realize very quickly, oh man, how do I spin that many words in such a short and long time frame? And I mean, I'm one of those guys, I don't really go with a heavy script load. I'm not the kind of guy that's going to go above and beyond with the 7 years of facts and history. I call it as I see it. And I think that's what the people have come to appreciate from my calls, is just that there's not a lot of nonsense in between. Don't get me wrong, we have fun. I've definitely said some things and looked around the room and nobody's got a not laughing face at that point, because sometimes it's funny. You got to have fun with it. You know, one of my favorite calls, I think, was actually during that last Abington game you were talking about. I forget exactly who the goal scorer was, but he sniped it top shelf. And I made reference to the top shelf where Mama hides the cookies. And I know Mad Dog looked at me and said, what did you just say? So it's a lot of fun. And that's really what it comes down to. You just got to have fun with it. And that's what I try to focus on. I don't try to hype myself up or hype up things that don't need to be that way. You know, let the game speak for itself. Let the kid's talent speak for itself. And the game will unfold in front of you. You just have to keep up.
What's it like to work with a guy like Brendan Connolly? Brendan, who has won awards. Brendan coming in on the heels of, you know, we had a gentleman who was here for many, many years. He would do the morning sports. He would call the games. And coming in on the heels of a legend who was set to retire, folks get used to a particular person, and maybe they may not want to still tune in. But I feel that Brendan, and you and I had an off-air conversation about this the other day. I've heard him over the past couple of years. It was one day I was actually tuned in. I'm like, oh, who's the new guy who's doing the sports? That's fantastic.
Right.
And come to find out, it was Brendan. And I actually texted him, like, was that you doing sports? He goes, yeah. I go, it was amazing. You know, this is a local guy that I've heard you and him call local hockey. And it's so enjoyable to listen to. Not to say that the past, you know, broadcasts with other radio personalities were not enjoyable, but it's nice to see that we have a mini farm system here on the South Shore, that we have talent blossoming, showcasing their skill set to our audience.
Yeah, and you know, I got to tip my cap to Brendan, because we both kind of came on the scene at the same time. And originally, it almost looked like the two of us were going to be kind of rivals for a minute, to be honest with you. The two of us were kind of eyeballing the same things, and we were both on the same level of operating. And over time, that dynamic eventually evolved into, you know what? We're actually a pretty good team. I take care of the play-by-play. He has all the color. He has a great working knowledge of all of the local schools, all of the local athletic directors. I mean, and there's not anyone here in the South Shore or the North Shore nowadays that doesn't know his name. And that is huge, to be able to have someone that works not only multiple angles, multiple outlets, but is as dedicated and as passionate as Brendan is on high school sports. And it's not just one thing. He is far from a one-trick pony. If you follow his Twitter, and I got to give him a shout out, BCon63, two N's on that on Twitter. He is always up to date with his information. You can hear it here first. And that's, again, you know, when this whole thing took off and high school hockey season particularly started, I said, Brendan, you're in charge of the schedule. Why? Because Brendan, nobody else has a better handle on the pulse of high school hockey, especially than you do. And it's proven to be an absolute gem because Brendan is, like I said, I mean, not to overpump it, but he knows what he's talking about. And I don't know if it just makes it look a lot easier than it actually is for him, but he does such a fantastic job that it makes my job as a play-by-play that much easier. Because we, not only do you have that chemistry back and forth, we both know each other's habits now. We know what we're about to do. If I drop it off for him, he picks it right up, doesn't miss a beat, vice versa. And it's just amazing to be able to work with someone of that caliber. And knowing that we're both homegrown WATD broadcasters, it's just even that much better. Because, Kevin, as you know, this industry is wild. You could be working with someone different every night for the next 20 years and never have an opportunity to make that kind of chemistry. But, you know, Brendan and I can show up almost any rink anywhere in the state, and we're on the same page and we're good. So tip of the cap to Brendan for everything that he does, not only for the WATD Sports Network, but all of the other outlets that he works with and covers, which, let me tell you, folks, if we started naming them off, we'd be here for at least another 20 minutes.
Indeed, and we only have like 2 or 3 minutes left here. Again, in kudos, honorable mention, not only to Quinn Kelly, who does a fantastic job calling sports, and of course, we'll always love Bill Wilhelm and his sports team, but you know what? With time, you know, you have to always find a way to have a new, fresh voice. Bill, of course, enjoying his retirement and knowing probably that there's a good set of young broadcasters who are doing local sports, high school sports.